Welcome and all once again to Dual Worlds in episode 158. This week I'm joined by Martin.
Hello.
And do you want to introduce our guest?
I can. This week we have special guest Nick Chester from Harmonix. Hello.
Hey, hello. How are you?
We're fine, I guess. Somewhat.
You guess? Well, let's fix that. Let's make you great.
Okay. No, I'm great.
Let's make you ultimate. There
you go.
But yeah, he's here this week to discuss Fantasia and some other Harmonix games coming out down the pipeline. But before we get there, as always, we're going to kick it off with what we've been playing, which actually isn't a ton this week for me. Better it and all that fun jazz. But Martin, what have you been playing?
I tried to play more Drive Club, but mostly that was not possible because the servers are still not working. That's bad. Otherwise, I've been playing more of Styx, Master of Shadows, which I still really like. I'm surprised how... I mean, like I said, it's a real hardcore stealth game, but I'm surprised how much I'm really enjoying it and how much they do things people used to do in the past. When I played Thief, so much was about the sound and how much sound you make. And this game gets the same thing right, even as like a mechanic previously didn't really have and will stealth kill someone. You have to choose to either kill him immediately, but then he's more likely to make a loud sound, or you can try to like strangle him while slowly killing him, so that way he doesn't really make a sound. But that of course takes longer and stuff like that. I still think that's a really cool game, and I'm quite surprised how much I'm liking it.
Because you get to strangle a man to death? That seems kind of morbid.
Well, whatever. I'm a goblin killing filthy humans, so I guess that's fine, right?
I don't know if that makes it better.
Yeah, I think if you're a goblin killing humans, it's okay, and if you're a human killing goblins, it's okay. It's if you're a human killing humans, that's where the line is drawn.
Yeah. Well, it depends.
And if you're a goblin killing goblins, is that okay or is that bad?
I don't know. It's difficult.
Yeah, I don't really have a stance on goblin violence, so I'm gonna bow out of this conversation.
Yeah.
it's good to know that goblins are not safe around you too.
Yeah. And one other thing, because Earl actually gave me allowance to talk about one of the board games I tried out, is Frankenstein's Bodies, which I thought was super fun. I tried it out today, and it's really cool. It's an interesting theme. It's a card-playing game, which you take cards of body parts, and you try to basically create two bodies that later on will impress Dr. Frankenstein. And you do that by basically combining the parts of the right gender, and there are also different color parts, and but at the same time the people are competing with each other, and they have like cool action cards that allow you to like snatch body parts from other people's operating tables. But if you do that, you are not that skilled, so the body part will most likely get an infection, and then you have to get rid of that infection because otherwise you can't score points for that body part and stuff like that. It's a really fun interactive game with it sounds kind of morbid, and it somehow is, but at the same time, because it's so interactive and parts getting stolen all the time, you try to create this perfect body which will score you the most points. It's really fun.
Well, how does the point system work?
The point system works with you get points for every body part that's not infected. You get bonus points for if you have body parts that are of the same color. They have like red, blue, green, yellow, I think, were the colors. And you also get bonuses for if you create like a body which is just the same gender. And on top of that, you can also collect like master surgeons, and they give you basically point bonuses for specific parts. You can basically say like, okay, I get this master surgeon, and he's in charge of the heads, so that way the heads actually score more points. And also at the same part time, if you have one of these master surgeons, he takes care of the other players in the sense that they no longer can steal that body part.
Okay. When does the game end? Because there's a point system, but when does it say... Okay,
yeah, like I said, it's card-based, so you have this deck of cards, and you basically go through the deck twice. Because not every card will be taken at any point. Every player can just take two cards every turn. So you go through the deck once. You can, during that time, score at any point if you think your bodies look good at that point. And then after all the cards have run out, you do it another time, and then the end scoring happens.
Okay. And if I assume these cards have like body parts on them and stuff, which is a really weird thing to say. Did anybody create any grotesque monsters or anything, or anything that you enjoy?
They are just human body parts, so but it looks kind of gruesome. It's like decapitated heads and like arms when you see all the tendons coming out and stuff like that.
Sounds pleasant.
Yeah, like I said, it looks a bit gruesome and stuff, but actually playing it is a lot of fun.
Well, again, of course, if you strangle orcs, you have no problem mutilating human bodies, so...
Well, they're already dead, right? So...
I don't think that makes it better to harvest their body parts.
I'm trying to impress...
I mean, it makes it better than harvesting it when they're alive, but it's not much better.
I'm trying to impress Frankenstein. What do you expect, right?
Well, Frankenstein was insane.
That's debatable.
Somebody just have like a motorcycle drive by.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, just real quick, because I am really terrible right now at these games playing. I've been playing more Fire Emblem Awakening. I'm not going to go into details with that. The only thing I really noted, this is the first time I noticed it, and I'm completely oblivious for missing it so many times, is that the characters have actual birthdays, which I thought was such a fantastic little touch to make them real characters. Like, I went into the game, and you know, you can go into like the barracks and they'll be talking to each other and it's like, it's so-and-so's birthday. And then you give them all these presents and stuff. And I thought, this is awesome. Like, how many games do you play where people actually have real world birthdays? Like, we have systems that all have kindness built in, but not often are used for anything as far as character goes. And I thought it was great. And I thought it was something built into the game, but I actually Googled it and everybody actually has a set birthday. So if you go in on this date, it will be their birthday every day, every year. And I think that's a really novel feature, but I thought it was the greatest thing in the world because I felt like I had to use that character now because it's her birthday and it would be bad to eat her on the bench. And I just thought it was like the greatest thing. I don't know why. Like I said, it's such a tiny thing, but it just made the characters all the more real to me because they have things that we all have. We all have birthdays. We all celebrate them. But you never, like, you know, like, even in, like, movies and stuff, like, people have birthdays for storyline reasons, like, on sitcoms. It's that, so they can throw a party that they don't want to attend, or somebody's throwing them a surprise party they know about, so how do they keep it a surprise? Yeah. And it's never given a date. Here, it's, like, an actual date. Like, her birthday is always going to be October 17th. And I thought that was just really cool.
I think overall, Fire Emblem is just really good at making you care about all these characters. Which, of course, is important. I mean, if you play it the right way, which is playing it normal, in which if your character dies, he's gone forever, then it makes it really hard for you to lose someone.
Yeah, I didn't play that way. It's my first Fire Emblem. And I still don't learn that my fires are weak to arrows, so I always put them in the front line. And they always get KO'd, and I'm like, oh, right, that's their weakness, isn't it?
Yeah.
I felt bad because it happens to the same two every time, and I always forget because I only play, like I said, I only play during my lunch break at work, so I play like once a day, and you don't necessarily, like, sometimes it's just grinding. Speaking of, it's also weird that how Nintendo hides some of this stuff in that game. Like, I didn't know, like, there's a whole spot pass functionality because it's hidden on the wireless, which I assume would have been like internet connection and not necessarily stuff that you get when you pass people.
Yep.
So I went there by accident the other day. I'm like, wow, there's like this whole part of the game I've been missing. Like, you can create your own spot pass team to fight against people, and they can show up in your game, and you can fight them.
Yeah.
And if you beat them, you can recruit their leaders, but I don't do anything because their leaders don't gain any type of relationship status, so I don't know why I'd put them on my team. But it's really neat that, again, it's another way to kind of build on your team and grind and stuff like that, which I don't find tedious. I actually enjoy grinding here because, like, a lot of my characters are now hitting the point where they can level up and be recast or, you know, evolve. I guess that's the term.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to get them there before I do the story mission because I don't want them to kind of hit the cap during a story mission and then not get any experience. And you can't really use the Master Seal during a battle. I don't think, anyhow. So there's that. It's an old game. Really having fun with it. I'm really disappointed it took me a year and a half to open it.
I think I told you way earlier that you should actually just play it.
and I wanted to, but I really, really have been trying to stick to one game, one system, and I had Pokemon in there for about a year, and I really wanted to finish Pokemon. I don't want to say it's a terrible thing, but I do really want to stick to that, because what happens if I don't is I'll take one game, I'll play something else, and I never go back to the older game. So this way, it's like, I'm either going to force myself to play it or really just, you know, admit to myself, I don't have any interest in going back to this. It's time to put it to rest.
So what are you, Nick? Did you have time to play anything besides your own games?
So to the point you actually just made about not finishing any games, that's sort of how I am, but I play everything. So I'm going to, like, rattle off, like, 10 games I'm playing right now, and then we can choose to focus on any of them if you'd like. So I'm playing Shadow of Mordor at home on my PS4 with my wife. We do couch, like, co-op and switch back and forth. We've been playing that in my spare time. I finally got around to playing Dead Rising 3, I guess it is, because it came out on PC, so I'm playing that, and I think I'm almost finished with that game. Maybe, sort of.
Maybe you should talk about Dead Rising. I don't think we have anyone on here that actually played it.
Really? So
yeah.
I really liked Dead Rising 1 for what it was. I'm a big fan of zombies. I'm a big fan of just slaughter a bunch of things. And there were a ton of zombies in that game, and it was, like, super duper silly, really over the top. But the game was really, really broken. Like, mechanically, like, the first game was, like, not like, the combat wasn't great. Like, when you were fighting, like, groups of zombies, it was fantastic because you'd just be able to mow them down. But anytime you got in these one-on-one situations with, like, the bosses, it was just, like, you would have to, like, hit them and then run away and hide because there was, like, no way to block or any, like, real way to dodge. It was just, like, really, really frustrating. And that carried over to the second game, which, like, as soon as I put it in, I got immediately frustrated. I was like, I don't know why I spent so many hours playing the first game. Like, this game sucks. And whether or not that's, I mean, it's, like, it's fine. Like, people enjoyed it, but I did not, like, want to spend time to play 2. But for some reason, I went back to 3, and it's still broken in a lot of the same ways that the other games are, but for some reason, I have the capacity to, like, deal with all of that stuff, and I'm just kind of, like, having a good time. Like, you can, you know, there's a weapon crafting system where you could, like, make all these, like, crazy over-the-top weapons. Like, you could, like, attach a rake to a grenade, and it becomes, like, a grenade rake for some reason. And you could, like, attach 2 different cars together and make all these just, like, wild, crazy, over-the-top vehicles to basically crush zombies with. And I'm having a good time with it. Like, it's fine. It's just sort of crazy, mindless fun, and I'm not thinking too much while I'm playing it. I'm just sort of, like, running into a group of zombies with a scythe and mowing all of them down, and that makes me feel really good about myself. I don't know why. Maybe that's another podcast.
Nick, do you, like, miss the time constraints that were in the previous games? Personally, I really liked the first one as well, and how it, like, how you had to manage time. I think that was a huge part of the first game.
Yeah.
And I know that part is basically missing from the third one. But do you miss it, or do you think it's worse because of it? Do you think it's better?
So I think, like, it depends on sort of, like, what kind of, like, gamer you are. So I think when I played the original Dead Rising, I didn't have, like, a young daughter, and my full-time job wasn't as... I didn't have to commit so much time to my full-time job, so I had more time to play games. So I had plenty of time to sort of, like, play Dead Rising, die, have to start over again, play it again, die, and sort of, like, because every time you die, you'd be able, if I'm remembering correctly, you'd be able to power up Frank.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You'd be able to be better the next time you went into it and start from the beginning. Where I am now in my life, I feel like if I went back and tried to do that, I would be like, I have an hour and a half to play this game, like, once a week, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would never get anywhere in it. I would probably want to, like, smash the controller and, like, never play that game again. So I guess to answer your question, where, like, I I like the removal of the time constraints in the third game, but only because that's like the way I have to play games now, because I don't have the time to really dedicate to that sort of like trial and error experience of the first game. But like thinking about it now, actually, I think it was more gratifying. The first game is more gratifying because I felt like I was constantly like progressing, and like there were all these different ways for me to progress through the game. Whereas now it seems more linear, and it's fun, but I like you said, like the time constraint stuff is like mostly gone. It's still there a little bit. Like it'll yell at me like, "Oh, you have 4 hours to, you know, get to the plane," or whatever it is, but I never feel like it's overbearing in the way that the first game was. And that's not bad, it's just different.
And what happens if you don't like hit the plane in 4 hours? Does it reset on you, or is it just like, oh, you missed your chance?
In the first game, it was basically like, oh, you're screwed, like, so-and-so is dead, or you've missed the chance to do this. And then, if I'm remembering correctly, I think you were able to continue playing the game if you missed some of the events, but you would never be able to sort of like continue down the like quote unquote real story path to get like the real ending of the game.
Exactly.
So you would have to sort of like, you'd have to make a decision like, I'm gonna keep playing and see where this takes me, and I know I'm never gonna be able to like quote unquote finish the game, but at least I could sort of like, you know, level up my character, or you would just sort of like quit, back out to the beginning and start over again. In the third game, I have no idea what happens because I haven't missed any of the deadlines yet, and I haven't even really been trying. So I don't think they're really like, they're not serious about that.
Yeah. What else?
So I'm playing those two games. I played this week Elegy for a Dead World, which is a game that's actually on Kickstarter right now, and they think they just met their goal. It's basically, they call it a game about writing fiction, and pretty much what it is you explore these, at least the level that I played, is these gorgeous, like sort of like painterly looking worlds that you explore, and there's no set story. They get it's almost like if you're familiar with the way Mad Libs works, where they'll have a set story and you just start to like have to, you know, insert your own nouns here or there. It's not blind like Mad Libs, but basically the way it works is I was moving through these worlds, I was picking up these feathers which in the world would bring up basically like fragments of a sentence or a full sentence with pieces missing. And then you as a player have to fill in those different fragments basically with your own story. So you're building your own story as you're playing through these worlds. And it can be as elaborate and crazy as you want. I don't know if there's any fail state for it. It's more of like an experiential kind of thing, but it was pretty cool getting to the end of the story or the ends of these worlds that the developer had created, and like realizing that I had basically given context to everything that's happening. Because I could have said different things, and I could have totally gotten like a different vibe from what was happening. But then sort of like at the end of the world, you have the opportunity to basically upload your story via Steamworks, and then other players can actually read and experience the story that you created, which is super interesting, to me, at least.
Yeah, that definitely sounds really interesting. I think I need to check that out.
Yeah, it's Elegy for a Dead World. Dijabon Games, they're actually local in Boston. They're actually making it. And it looks like they met their goal, so they will actually be creating the game and releasing it.
Cool.
And what else have I been playing? I tried to play Sunset Overdrive today.
Already?
I was lucky enough to get a code, but I don't have a retail Xbox at home. I have a dev kit Xbox at home, and I tried to trick it into being a retail Xbox, and because I really wanted to play Sunset Overdrive, and it didn't work.
Aww.
So that's just me being sad. What else am I playing? I have to be playing other stuff. I am playing Fantasia, which is weird for me. I know we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But I've been playing bits and pieces of Fantasia through the development over the past like 3 or 4 years, but it's one thing like seeing it together, like from like, you know, stitched together in the way a player will experience the game. So I've been playing that on the Xbox 360, and I'm biased, but I think it's awesome.
Okay. I think more than anything, it says that if you're playing it at home in your free time, that says more to me than anything, because you're enjoying it as a consumer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm excited to see what people actually think about the game. But it's cool. I can play it at home. And my daughter, she's about to turn 5. She's been watching me play it. She can't actually play the game because she could understand the concepts, but she can't follow directions very well. So I'll tell her, like, oh, you have to do this, and she'll just, like, ignore me and do whatever she wants, and the game will break. she'll watch me play, and it's really cool sort of watching her face as I'm uncovering things and discovering stuff, like, in these worlds and in the music, which seems, it's pretty special. It's cool.
Yeah, I also saw some good feedback from people who tried the demo.
But yeah, to your point, we released a demo, and we've gotten really good feedback from players, which has been cool, because these are the same groups of people, at least, like, when I look at, like, a lot of the feedback has been coming, like, vocally from, like, you know, Twitter. You'll see people on Twitter talking about it. And then you'll see people on, like, NeoGAF, and you'll see people on Reddit talking about it, too. And the comments are pretty much just like, I thought this game was going to be garbage. I can't believe they were ruining Fantasia. I played it. This is amazing. I pre-ordered it. Like, I pre-ordered the deluxe edition. And these are, like, the same people who are just, like, have discounted Motion Gaming, have discounted, like, anything like Disney. They're, like, more, like, probably core gamers, you can call them, and they've just, like, they're completely sold on what we've done with it, and I'm like in those threads, and I'm like chiming in. I'm just like, I told you 2 years ago when you were talking all of the trash. I told you it was fun. Why didn't you listen to me?
Yeah, that must be really rewarding. I have to admit, I wasn't very sure about that game either, and I'm kind of sad that I didn't get the chance to try it at Gamescom when I met you. But it sounds that it turned out really well.
Yeah, I mean, the game, we ship it next week on Tuesday, which is crazy. It's finally going to be out there. And, like, I guess people will be reviewing the game, and which is really weird. I don't know what, like, I'm going to go to bed on Monday and then wake up in the morning, and people who get paid to have opinions will have opinions about the game. So that's cool and scary. Well, I mean, we'll see. I hope people like the game. Like, that's, like, all you can do, right? Like, you work with a team, and you are, like, true to your vision of what you want to do with a game, and you're, like, honest with what you're doing, and you think you're making something fun, and you hope people, you know, you hope it resonates with people.
Is review time still a really nerve-wracking thing for you and the other guys?
So it's, like, with Fantasia, it's kind of weird, because the project on Fantasia has been, like, wrapped officially for, like, a couple months now. And the game has just sort of been waiting to be released because, you know, the holiday timing is sort of the best time to release a game like this. So a lot of those teams are sort of dispersed at Harmonix, and they're working on other things. So I don't know. Like, it's almost like, I don't want to say they've forgotten that it's actually coming out. But I think they're so engaged in doing other things right now that it's probably not on their minds as much. For me, certainly it is, because I'm still working on it. You know, I'm still out there doing, you know, publicity and marketing and stuff for the game. And yeah, it's kind of nerve wracking. I think it's always like that. So, you know, like I said before, like you think you have something really, like, interesting and fun, and you hope people are going to like it, but you have no idea. You know, like, sometimes you're so close to a game and you think it's good, but it's, you know, you miss all of the things about it that are maybe not so great.
Yeah.
Or you know there are things about it that are not so great, but you don't know. You don't know if people are going to, like, not necessarily notice. You don't know how much of an impact on the experience it's going to be for them. So you'll see. We'll see. I don't know. Yes, it's nerve-wracking.
I'm kind of curious about this. Like, what part of the process is more nerve-wracking? When the reviews hit from, like, professional reviewers, or when it starts going out to consumers and you hear that first feedback from them and how they kind of take to the game?
I don't know if one is more nerve-wracking than the other. I think they're both probably equally as nerve-wracking, and I think, at least me, I weight them both as important as one another. There's, like, this whole thing where, you want reviewers to like the game because that's going to look good on Metacritic, and it's what consumers, or at least, like, you know, the enthusiast consumers see first. It's, like, almost like if the game's getting poor reviews, maybe they won't even try the game. So you want reviewers to enjoy the game and actually try to, like, you know, get other people interested in it, like, through their reviews. Because if all the reviewers are saying this is a great thing and people should pay attention to it, like, maybe some heads are going to turn. If it's just, like, this middle of the road, like, people are just like, it's a game, nobody's going to care. And if people they poop all over it, then obviously you're screwed. But I weigh them both equally as much. I don't place emphasis on one over the other. Like, when I actually do, so when we released, like, the previous Dance Central games, one of the first things I did at actually Harmonix when I came in is We were working on we've just shipped Dance Central 2, and we started working on concepts for what Dance Central 3 would be. And one of the things I actually did was I actually went into like all of the reviews and all of like the consumer feedback that we were getting online, and I sort of distilled that down into like, okay, here's what people really, really like about the Dance Central 2 experience. Here's what they didn't like about the experience. They weren't like broken up in the buckets where like, here's what reviewers like and here's what consumers like. It was just sort of like they were all dropped in the same bucket of like, this is what people like, this is what people want more of, and this is what people like really disliked about it and how where we can improve. So development wise, I don't think there's sort of any difference between like the feedback from the two.
Also, you guys at this point seem to have like a lot of games on the table, right? I mean, previously it always seems like, at least publicly, you only worked on one thing, but when I met you at Gamescom, I was like, yeah, we have Dance in the Spotlight, we have Fantasia, we have A City Sleeps, and we have Amplitude as well coming up. Was that like a conscious decision from your studio to maybe like expand and do multiple things, some smaller things on the side?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we sort of look at how like the different ways that you can make games in like the current like, you know, environment, like you could spend less time with smaller teams making really, really awesome stuff. You don't need to go all in on like one project. And you know, there was a time where like almost the entire studio was working on like a Rock Band game. Yeah. You know, Rock Band, the first Rock Band game basically just like consumed the entire studio, as did the ones that sort of came after it. And like that seems sort of like almost like crazy and wasteful in a way. When you look at like all the talent we have at the studio and all the awesome things we can be doing in different sort of like markets, like you could make, you know, you could put like a team working on a AAA game, but if you have people left over, you could have people working on like a smaller PC game, like A City Sleeps, or experimenting on smaller projects, like our VR project that we're going to be releasing for Samsung's Gear VR, or we have like smaller teams basically working on prototypes and then working on like mobile games and things like that. So like it was definitely a very conscious effort on our part to make sure that we were doing more things and doing things a little bit smarter with our teams versus sort of throwing everybody on one thing. And sort of the result of that is, yeah, like instead of us just releasing one game or working on one game, like I'm currently like balancing 8 different projects, which is like kind of insane, but cool because they're sort of like all over the place. And, you know, we don't want to be known as just the studio that makes like Rock Band, which is what we are to a lot of people. Like, we have a lot of talent. We could do a lot of really cool things in the music space. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, with like a, you know, a plastic instrument or beat match. Like, we could do different stuff with music, and we're like interested in exploring that stuff. And you can't do that if everybody's all in on one thing.
One of your projects I'm personally very invested in is, of course, Amplitude. I still remember, like, when I played the demo on PS2 of that game and spent hours just with the demo. But, yeah, can you maybe update us on how that is going at this point?
Yeah, so Amplitude is coming along actually really, really well. We have the game up and running in our engine, finally. We basically ported a lot of the code over from the original game into our new engine because, you know, what we said we were going to do with the game is we weren't going to, like, reinvent the wheel with Amplitude. Like, people wanted a new Amplitude game, and that's exactly what we're going to give them. So, yeah, we have the game up and running in our new engine with, like, all the new music. Works with the PS4 controller, works with the PS3 controller. Feels super-duper good. Sounds great. We're going to be getting some art in actually pretty soon, and I think you'll probably see more of that game, and people may even be able to have a chance to play the game someplace before the end of the year.
Oh, nice.
I wonder what that someplace could be, if there's a film on it this year somewhere.
Is that happening? You're very perceptive.
So at this point you said you're getting art in. Do you have at this point a complete soundtrack, or is that also still in flux?
I think we're getting pretty near locked with our soundtrack. We've announced a lot of the artists that will be on board. Like, you know, we had a lot of folks on board, like Danny Baranowski and some other folks who will be helping us out. So that music is actually in the game right now. It's some stuff that people recognize from those composers, and there's some like brand new stuff that people have been working on. We have a lot of the music that we've been working on in-house that's in the game. And then we have a couple of other surprises, like things that have sort of come up, you know, after we've sort of gone quiet, that I think people will be pretty excited about. So, I mean, I think we're pretty locked with our soundtrack right now. If something cool comes up and somebody really wants to get their music in the game, and it seems like it would be worth it for us to do it, we will probably be able to figure out a way to get them in there. But I think we're pretty solid right now. And we'll have more information on the soundtrack pretty soon, too.
I'm curious, though, how you selected your soundtrack at this point. Did you, like, since, if people don't know, you are not going with, like, mainstream music, like, with the previous Amplitude and even Frequency. You're reaching out, I guess, to people like Danny B, or did you just say, hey, whoever has something cool, just send it to us? How did you go about that?
Yeah, so we actually reached out to those folks. I mean, we're friendly with them. We love their work. We thought they'd be awesome to work with, like folks like Jim Guthrie. Like, I'm a huge fan of Sword and Sorcery and the work that he did.
That has wonderful soundtrack.
With those folks. Yeah. It's just like this amazing soundtrack. And Danny B does like incredible stuff, like, you know, Crypt of the Necrodancer and you know, Super Meat Boy. Like, we just love that music. So we had early on, we had decided that we weren't going to go after sort of like the big artists that we had gone out after in the past. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One reason is licensing that stuff is super expensive, like prohibitively so in some cases. And we're doing a digital game, so there's that. The other reason was because when you get music from artists, you just get the music generally as is, and then you have to create the gameplay around it. Yeah. And that works for something like, you know, like Rock Band, where it's supposed to be a simulation. But when you're making a game that's like this crazy over the top, like hardcore beat match style game, if there's like a lousy bass part in that song that you've decided to like choose, that's a great song otherwise, but like there's one instrument or two instruments that are just like constantly boring, like you can't do anything about that. It just is what it is. But like if we create music ourselves, where we work with these composers like Danny B and Jim and you know all the other folks that we're working with, we can say like, hey, this is an awesome composition, but like it's kind of lacking here, or it needs more here, or it needs more there. And then we can, you know, they can update the music, or they can like write a new part for it to make sure that the music and the gameplay are like super duper fun together.
Hmm. One important question for every Harmonix music game, of course, is freeze pop in it?
Yes.
Okay. That's great, then.
Yep, I'll say that. I'll confirm that. That's happening.
Okay, great. and the other game you have, I think it's out right now, right? City Sleeps?
Yes, the City Sleeps is out. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you think has that been going? It looks quite interesting. I haven't had the chance to play it yet, but I'm definitely interested.
So A City Sleeps, for those who don't know, it's a music-driven twin-stick shooter, which is sort of like, it's a bullet hell hardcore game. It's a game that has, you know, deep roots in, like, old-school crazy shmups of you know, days past. You know, you don't see a lot of those games anymore. You use games like Jamestown, obviously. There's a new version of that coming out for PS4 and I think maybe Vita. So there are people making those games, but there aren't many people making those games, and there aren't many people making those games where everything that happens on the screen is actually driving this original soundtrack. So basically, the conceit of the game is you are the protagonist is named Poe. She's a dream exorcist, and what that means is she can go into people's dreams and basically fight demons in their dreams. Mm-hmm. So every level is actually based around basically the different subconscious of a different person that you're going into their mind as they're sleeping. And we have a composer who's created an original soundtrack based around sort of that like different like dream state, and then we have designers who are working with that composer to build out these crazy bullet hell levels. So every enemy spawn that appears in the game, every bullet that you're firing, every like bullet that the enemies are firing at you, are actually triggering different things, different pieces of this of MIDI in the song, and they're actually building the music as you're playing. So it's not really rhythmic input or beat matching like you would with like Rock Band or a lot of our other games. It's really about, you know, musical output. So you're doing stuff, or stuff is happening to sort of like create and build up the soundtrack. It's a little bit different.
Yeah. Did the idea of that game kind of like come from Chroma, I guess?
Yeah, a bit actually. So the concept for Chroma was sort of an arena first person shooter where players would sort of like, you know, battle and create music as they were firing and fighting with each other. And so some of the challenges of that game were that people had some players had a really hard time with the beat match musical input and the first person shooting, because that requires a lot of headspace. Like when you're playing a Twitch first person like arena shooter, you need to be like on point. You know what I mean? Like you are very focused on one thing, and that one thing is not getting killed and then killing everybody else. It's not necessarily like, you know, like shooting to the rhythm or stuff like that. Some people love that and some people didn't. But what everybody really did love, we got the feedback from our closed alpha, was everybody loved the way that the game sounded, and they loved it the way sort of the music built as people were fighting. And there were a lot of weapons in that game that were basically, we called them internally like musical hoses, where you would like basically fire your gun and then just music would sort of like come out of your gun. You know what I mean? Like it would just like add to the music. That worked out really, really well. And so when we decided to sort of step back from Chroma and focus on other projects, a small part of that team actually had this concept for this bullet hell shooter, and they wanted to use like some of the best parts of that musical output for this new game. So yeah, so it definitely has roots in Chroma, for sure.
Oh, that's cool. Earl, I think you wanted to ask some question that was maybe tangentially related to video games.
I wanted to ask something about this. I'm kind of curious, like, how hard was it to balance so, like, everything made a sound that actually built to a coherent, like, music track? Like, was it, like, repeatedly trying different sounds for everything to make sure it fits? Or was it, like, okay, we have this sound, how do we make a track around it?
That's a really, really great question, and a lot of that actually happened over a long period of many, many months, actually, to sort of make sure that everything sounded really, really good. I don't have a great answer for your question. We would probably have to talk to the audio guys for that, but I do know that it went from sounding pretty cool to sounding like garbage to sounding really, really awesome, and that was basically just experimenting and just playing with different sounds and making, you know, making sure everything sounded good together. And I think they just got really good at that. So by the time they started working on Chroma, it was like relatively easy. But I will say that it takes a really long time to build a song that's tied to gameplay like that, like way longer than you would expect it to be. And it's not cheap to do. So when somebody's like, there needs to be more songs in this game, be like, we would love for that to happen, but we need to shift the game eventually.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about, because it does sound like an extremely difficult task to make sure everything kind of lines up and sounds like an actual thing when you put it together, especially if everything's fading in and out as you go through the level based on your actions.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, the music in the game is, I think it's really, really good. It's all this, one of our in-house sound designers and composers who goes by the name of MQ, he actually put the soundtrack together. So it turns out he ended up being like a designer on the game too, because he would look at the levels and be like, oh, these enemies are going to spawn here and their bullet patterns are going to look like this, and what does that sound like? And so he builds these songs around that, and like taken on their own, I mean, we sell the soundtrack on its own, like you could just listen to them on their own, you're like, this sounds awesome, like this, I would listen to this in my car, like I would just like, I would rock this at like a club. Like you could see people like jamming out to it, like at, you know, like you know, an EDM party or like a hip hop party or something like that. And when I listened to the music, I could picture the game like happening in my head. Like every time something triggers in the music or something different happens, like I'm picturing the enemy spawns and I'm picturing the bullet patterns, and it's really weird. Like I can't separate the two anymore. But if you've never played the game, you'd be like, oh, this is just an awesome song. But like once you play the game and know why those things are triggering and happening in the music, like you just cannot get away from it.
Okay. I'm very curious to check this game out now. Now to Martin's point about being tangentially related, I've been curious because Harmonix has sponsored the Game Industry Rumble for PAX Prime and PAX East. How did that come about?
Oh, my God. So I think, like, years and years and years ago, so Alex Navarro, who's now a Giant Bomb, used to work at Harmonix back in the day. I don't know how many years ago, 5, 6 years ago by this point.
Yeah, and I think I met him when Rock Band Beatles came out. I think that was last year or something.
Yep, yeah, that sounds about right. So that was a while ago, and he's a big wrestling fan. Aaron Trites, who works on the community team at Harmonix, is also a big wrestling fan. And I think, like, this was before I even worked at Harmonix. I was having a discussion with them about our favorite wrestling games, which are inevitably most people end up on, like, you know, the N64, you know, Aki games, or AKI games. Most people say those are their favorite games. And we came up with, like, the stupidest idea. We're like, oh, I should just come into the office one day and we should just have, like, some beers and just do a Royal Rumble. That would be fun. And it never happened. And I don't know why it never happened. And this is years ago. And then, like, I guess right before the first PAX Rumble, like a couple months prior, Aaron had IM'd me and was like, I'm gonna do our N64 panel, like our thing. I'm gonna do it as a panel. And I was just like, that's the craziest idea I've ever heard. And then it just sort of like escalated into like, oh, we'll just do a 30-man battle royal and we'll invite all of our friends and we'll see what happens. And we had no idea how it was going to go. And if you've seen the videos of it, it escalated quickly.
I'm curious. You didn't escalate it, right? It was all the people just starting doing promos and stuff, right?
Yeah, like we didn't really give much guidance other than, like, we're going to do this Royal Rumble. It's going to be real dumb. Like, here are the other people who said they'd do it. And I, like, everybody sort of, like, knows each other, you know? Like, you know, they've been in the industry for a while. They work for different developers. They work for, you know, like, they've been around. So they know each other already. And I guess they felt comfortable enough to start, like, trash-talking one another on the internet and then making videos. And then, like, people just smashed, like, fake glass over each other's heads at the giant bomb panel, like, the day before. And it's just, it gets stupider and stupider. It's so good. It's just the dumbest thing. And nobody knows why we do it. We just do it because it's fun.
Yeah. And now everyone wants you to never stop with it.
I know. And now we just have to keep topping it over and over and over again every year. Like, at some point, we're just going to, like, burn packs to the ground. Like, that's the only way.
I guess the only problem with that from a fan standpoint is that it is kind of the one game that's like 15 years old, and the problem with that is like it's not like they're making better wrestling games to replace it. So it's like you're kind of stuck with like how long can we push this roster of 90s superstars that people somewhat remember. Like you have, I think the last one had like Gerald Briscoe and
Mr. Ass.
Yeah. Like, I mean, okay, even Mr. Ass is somewhat recent because they had that resurgence at the start of the year. But
well, there are ways. They could technically just, if someone invests the time, someone could just create custom wrestlers.
You can do that. You can actually hack the ROM for that game.
Oh,
I've actually seen it.
Yeah,
and you can actually
too.
Put custom wrestlers in there too. That's like a little much. I mean, maybe we have to do that. My hope is, and this is my hope, that we do this enough with this game enough that somebody somewhere is like, maybe we should make another one of these games.
That would
and
be
then
the
they
best.
Do it. That would be the
had,
best.
I've had that same hope since like 1999, so yeah. Who knows?
Did you never play Def Jam Earl? Those games
I have,
basically I have the same systems.
Oh, they
yes,
have the same
do.
System, but part of it is, again, you know, maybe it's bias or whatever. Part of it is still the license. Like, you want those WWE superstars. You want
true.
Those people you recognize. Like, I played Def Jam, and I played the Ultimate Muscle game that used a similar engine
because
it was the same company, and they had a similar engine. Like, I want more of those games, and I played them on the GameCube and the PS2 and stuff. Hey, Ted. But, you know, even then, they stopped making them after that era. And, you know, the SmackDown games are what they are. I also don't think they would make for fun viewing because a lot of, like, the eliminations and the rumbles and stuff, like, canned animation, so it's not as fun.
Yeah. Also don't think Def Jam and the Ultimate Muscle game have, like, a rumble option, so those games would not be possible to use.
They were not as feature complete as the most feature complete WWF game or WWE game, which is what bummed me out about them.
Yeah,
there was so much missing from those games.
Yeah, they had two story modes. I mean, they're really dumb story modes, but in a fun way.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, the feature wise, they're not as complete, but the basic gameplay systems, I think, still work very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, as you see from the PAX Rumble, and it holds up really well. People still enjoy watching it. People still enjoy playing it. I mean, part of it is also all the insanity that goes around the event with the pre-match promos. And this, I think the second one, everybody walked out before it started and had their little introduction and stuff like that. So it's going bigger and bigger. And now it has a running storyline as well. So that's something to watch.
So if you're listening and you want more of those games, I don't know, start bothering Jared Ray on Twitter or something.
Jared actually doesn't work for the WWE and 2K anymore, so don't bother.
Oh,
Jared.
Really?
Don't
when
bother
did that happen?
Jared.
Yeah,
it was in the past couple of weeks. So,
I mean, missed that.
You could bother Jared about something else, but maybe not that.
Ah, oh, damn it. Somehow I missed that.
Yeah, I don't know who we're bothering now.
Ah, oh, that sucks.
That's probably for the best. The WWE prefers to be a social company that doesn't have to be social. Like, they want you to tout and tweet and find them, but they don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, it's always kind of been a thing. We always joke about this on the show because, like, I think the company who makes it now makes Style Savvy, which, hey, I would fold that in, have me create my own Rush's wardrobe and stuff like that and be graded on that and his entrance attire. I'm fine with that. But, yeah, it's just, it's one of those things that just kind of came out of the PAX East. I had no idea what it was going to be. And then by the time the second one rolled around for PAX Prime, it became this huge thing where everybody wanted to be involved.
We had no idea either. I'm glad that it worked out because they're just so much fun to do. Like, literally hundreds of people show up to these events, and it's insane. So I hope we can keep doing them.
Okay, Nick, thanks for your time. I know we have to say goodbye to you. So
yes.
Thanks again for coming on and talking to us about dumb video games and the stuff you are doing at Harmonix.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, just one final question as you go. If you had to pick one horror movie to recommend for this month, what would you recommend?
Oh, God. I don't know if you're just asking this to everybody because it's October or if you're asking me because you know I really like horror movies.
It's a bit of both.
You just, like, blew up my brain because there's so many that I could actually recommend. I would probably recommend... Oh, God, why are you doing this to me? This is so stressful. I'm going to say Spirit Dark only because I was listening to the soundtrack earlier today. It's by this Italian group named Goblin, and they are freaking awesome, and the soundtrack is so good, and it's a beautiful movie. It's super-duper haunting, and if you have not seen Suspiria, you should see Suspiria immediately.
Oh, God, Nick, I love you so much for recommending this movie. Also, Goblin, like I said, is so great. I also prefer watching Dawn of the Dead with their soundtrack.
Yes, so do I. Have you seen them perform live?
No.
They went on tour in the United States for the time ever last year, and I got to see them play in Boston, and they played against scenes from all the films that they had scored, and I was just like in super duper. I was like in heaven. I was like absolutely floored by the whole thing. They are incredible.
Awesome.
So I know.
No, thank you.
Okay, thanks for joining. Okay, and welcome back. I want to thank Nick Chester again for joining us. Just real quick to close out the show, me and Martin are just going to run through the news. It was a very kind of light week for news. Actually, not a ton of great news.
Somehow news are that way, sadly.
Yeah, I mean, really, you know, great game news is usually when a new game's announced.
Yeah.
This week, it's just kind of the problems of this generation. Not necessarily this generation, but I guess I wanted to start off with the Halo Master Chief Collection, which has gone gold, which is good news. It's going to hit its November 11th date, which shouldn't be surprising because we really are today an HD collection, or a HHD collection, I don't know. But with that note also came the fact that it's going to have a day one content patch, which we're kind of getting used to by now. The big thing here is it's 20 gigs. Which, I mean, even on the best connections, it's a lot of time to invest to start the game.
That's, wow, 20 gigs is quite a bit. I mean, even I have a pretty good connection, but even 20 gigs would still take quite some time. Yeah, that's,
I don't know. I would have to do some math, but that takes a while.
Yeah, I mean, do the math. But I mean, the point is still that, as far as I know, this is kind of content to make the game a full experience. So it's not like you can put the disc in and play it. You have to download this 20-gig content patch. And I think part of it is because the game itself is it's the maximum of the Blu-ray disc that the Xbox One can read, and they had to put this separately.
Huh.
It also kind of goes into, I think, what we said at the start of this generation, is that the 500-gig hard drives sound great until you start getting all these day-one patches and install the mandatory installs, and then it gets... Because, I mean, if you download this game, it's about 65 gigs.
Yeah.
And that's just to play day one. This isn't talking about stuff that may happen down the road. Maybe they'll do some... I don't even know if they have DLC planned for this game or not.
Yeah.
It'd be really weird, but...
It's a tenth of your hard drive, basically. More than a tenth of your hard drive. Actually.
Yeah, because, I mean, the 500 isn't even 500, and this will be 65, and that's more than a tenth, as you said. So it adds up really quickly. And then, you know, you have stuff like Dead Rising, which has a 13-gig patch, and again, it adds up really quickly.
It would be interesting to know, from a manufacturing standpoint, how much of a difference it would have made to put a terabyte hard drive in it, in production for them.
I'm sure we'll hear about one of those next year really quickly.
Yeah. Thankfully, it's pretty easy to switch the hard drive out in like a PS4. I'm not quite sure how it is on the Xbox One. Oh, no, you don't actually have. I think external just works, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, but still, it's an extra investment, right? So...
Well, I mean, it's kind of what we're getting used to now. We have, I mean, like, even if you had a 360, like, if you had the launch model, if you still have a working one, you should pray to some deity, because I don't know how that happened. But yeah, you know, that stuff came with 10 and 20 gig hard drives, if they came with a hard drive at all. And, you know, that was great if it was just save files, and then you started getting, like, you know, indie and arcade games became a big deal, and then patches and save files. And that 20 gigs just seemed like nothing at that point. Like, there are games that don't run on those older models anymore because of the hard drive space.
Yeah.
And then the PS3 was kind of the same thing, and a lot of people learned how to take that out with, like, the screwdrivers and a laptop hard drive as a replacement.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that happened. And then, we've started this generation. The Wii U, we've kind of talked about before. I mean, that has nothing. It's 8 and 32 gigs. At this point, I mean,
even before the thing launched, I thought it was ridiculous to have such small space
for
the thing.
Yeah, I mean, the only somewhat positive about that is Nintendo's pretty decent with file sizes, like stuff like Mario and Donkey Kong are like 2 or 3 gigs, so it does give you, and they don't have mandatory installs and stuff like that, but it does go by really quickly. And then the same thing with the PS4 and the Xbox One, where almost every game that you get has some type of mandatory install on the hard drive, so that space, it's not like you can save it up, it gets eaten really quickly even if you buy retail or digital games. So it's the nature of the beast. It's not that hard drives aren't cheap. You can probably find a terabyte for maybe 50, 60 bucks nowadays. But it's just more stuff that you need around your system. And it's just a hidden cost that you're eventually going to have to pay. I guess on that, on a similar note, there was also a new Xbox One bundle announced this week. The Assassin's Creed bundle, which comes with Assassin's Creed Unity and Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, which I don't necessarily... It's very confusing what they're doing with Assassin's Creed this year, because doesn't Black Flag also come with that American edition thingy they're doing this year?
Now you're asking too much of me.
I'm asking you to care about Assassin's Creed again.
Yeah. Right after I've given up on the Shadow of Mordor.
I tell my friends about it. I'm like, you know, because it's 400 and 500 bucks, so it's not like you're paying more for the system to get these two games. And in the back of my head, I'm just thinking, if you get this early, you could get a decent trade-in value for them. So it brings the system down to like 350. And that's my thinking, because I don't care about the Assassin's Creed. So if I got it, I'd get these bundles just to kind of get rid of these two games and make some money back off of it. But it is what it is, and, you know, of course, being that this is the game industry, there were some conspiracies about this is probably why the Xbox One version is on parity with the PS4 version. Because you probably don't want to bundle an inferior product.
Yep.
Continuing with our good news train, Project Cars got delayed into March 2015.
Which I have to say, not too surprising in a way. I mean, personally, I think it's a really cool looking game. Also, one of the games I tried, but just shortly at Gamescom. Simulation Racer, of course, but it probably would have been slaughtered at the previous spot where it was at the end of November. I mean, there was just so much high caliber stuff in that time.
It's not. I mean, that's probably the biggest one. But you also have to think about the competition for racing, because we just had Drive Club, we had Forza Horizon, the crew's still out this year.
Yeah. Isn't the crew actually out, like, also on the 18th of November?
I thought they pushed that back to December.
Right. Yeah, they did another small push. You're right.
Yeah. But, yeah, the fact is it was surrounded by a bunch of games that were in the similar genre on those systems. So, it made... So, yeah, it's one, you know, like we said before, like, if you're Assassin's Creed, if you're Call of Duty, if you're GTA... Do November, whatever. Nobody's gonna push you around. But if you're a tiny game, and especially if this is the studio's first game, you probably don't want to go into that death pool head first. Granted, at this point, February and March of next year aren't much better, but it doesn't have as much racing competition.
Yeah. I mean, also... It seems like you told me that they also wanted just to take some more time with the game, which, if it's also another reason, that's always good. More polish is always good for video games. It really shouldn't be something you complain about, because otherwise you get cases like Battlefield 4.
Yeah, and I mean, also kind of to... Not to beat a dead horse. I mean, granted, it has a publisher now, so it isn't. But we already said indie games have... We use release windows for a reason. It is what they probably thought they could have got it done, but now they get to polish it for an extra 5 months, which sounds really weird. But yeah, I mean, if it makes for a better product, and if it makes for a product that's going to have room to breathe on its own, more power to them. Not necessarily. Okay, this is weird. I know we don't necessarily talk about rumors on this, but it's not a rumor, but it's not confirmed. It's kind of in between. Amazon leaked some details about Super Smash Bros. For the Wii U. Not too surprising. The Wii U version apparently will have the custom stage builder from Brawl, which, again, I don't know why it's that more of a thing in Wii U games. The gamepad seems to be an ideal thing for actually creating stages. It's a lot more user-friendly than analog sticks on a screen, to me.
Yeah.
Granted, I didn't use the Smash Bros. One either, but we shall see.
Yeah, me neither. I don't think I even touched that at any point.
I think I tried it out once or twice, but then you realize, like, it had, like... It was really weird what they did with it, because it had all of these, like, themes and setups, and it was, like, nothing from Smash Bros. It was, like, oh, here's, like, metallic gray boxes, or here's, like, some random grass tiles, and that's it. It's like, oh, but, you know, your game's all colorful and stuff, and you give me these steel ladders as my aesthetic. Like, okay, it stands out. They also said that there is going to be a Crazy Hand and Master Hand challenge mode. We don't necessarily know what that is. Again, which is why it's weird to talk about, because it's like a bunch of vague details. But, you know, this is...
picture of, like, the Master Hand and a lot of coins. Yeah. So, whatever that tells us.
Yeah. I mean, they did hint at it during this week, but they haven't gone into detail. And the thing that a lot of people are kind of interested in, and I think this can go either way, is that apparently the exclusive mode for the Wii U version is going to be a board game mode.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen board game modes in fighting games before. I mean, similar. I mean, I think Mortal Kombat has, like, Mortal Kombat Chess.
Yeah, but I mean that basically was a mini game that didn't really relate to the normal game.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of curious about, because I can see this can be like I'm curious because it can go multiple ways. Like,
oh no, you're actually right. The chess thing was more like battle chess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it could actually work for something like Smash Bros.
Yeah,
in that direction. Yeah.
I could see it going that way. Some people suggested something similar to Mario Party, and that, like, you'd go on spaces, and what would happen is, instead of, like, mini games and stuff, you know, like how Smash Bros. Has, like, all those random challenges?
Yeah.
That's what it would be. Like, one would be, you know, simply, like, who gets the most kills, the most KOs. Maybe it's, like, two giants and too many people, and trying to survive and stuff like that. Or it could simply just be kind of like, you know, like, sorry, like you're trying to get some face, and if you hit spaces with people, you get into a little fighting. Like, there's a lot of ways they can go with it. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting, and I also think that it's something that they could necessarily, they could probably use Amiibos for that as well. It could be awesome if, like, not necessarily, like, if you had to, you know, like how some board games can take a while. Mario Party's very guilty of this as well. And, like, say you have your pieces are the actual Amiibos, which would, one, would be cool, because you actually get pieces for a virtual board game. But let's say you do that, and then you can, like, stop the game and maybe come back a week later and pick it up where you have by just putting the pieces on the controller and then, like, setting the board up again for everybody. Mm. But, yeah, none of this really makes any difference because they haven't really detailed it. So it's just kind of everybody speculating. I'm assuming, hoping that we get a Nintendo... Sakurai said that there's going to be a Nintendo Direct to kind of detail these functions, but when that happens, anybody's business, anybody's guess, I would assume sooner rather than later, they already kind of... they launched the 3DS version, which we've kind of earned was successful. We're not really going to touch on MPDs. We don't do sales figures. But I think, 700,000 in the first 2 days in North America? Really great game. So, I mean, they got their sales. Now they can focus on the version that everybody's not calling a $40 demo. I feel bad when people say that because it's not a demo, but I understand what they're trying to get at. Like, it's the sample before the main course.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about before we wrap up?
I don't know. PS4 is getting system update 2.0. Some of the stuff in it sound interesting. Like that you can now use an external USB device to actually play music during your gameplay. So that's something they basically put back in.
Apparently, from what I heard, you want that for Drive Club.
Yeah, the thing is, it has music, but I'm not a fan of it, and it's like 5 tracks, so I would really like that. Also, it's in general, it's not a feature I've used in the past, except for driving games, if I have to be honest.
Yeah, I think I guess they fixed it. The problem that it used to have in a lot of older systems, it would just overpower everything.
Some games were very good about it. For example, on the 360, like Forza games, it was really good. And yeah, just for me, driving and hearing music I like, it's just such a thing. I still burn my own CDs because I don't have like something I can connect my iPhone to actually listen to something on the car otherwise.
Just a silly aside. When I do custom soundtracks for driving games, which I don't play that often, it's usually Sonic music, because my friends used to play Sonic music whenever we drove around, because that was their get hype music.
Hmm. It even makes sense. That music is very, like, upbeat.
Yeah, I've been energetic. Yeah. Yeah. And they were particular to Chemical Zone from Sonic 2. But yeah, it's like one of those things. Like, I'll put some of the other ones. I also like James Bond songs, like the newer ones, the Butt Rock, I think what people call them.
Mm.
Those are pretty decent. Like the You Know My Name and stuff like that. But yeah, I think driving. It's the same thing I do with open world games. If they have radio stations, I will find one that I like, and that's the one I always flip to.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, open world games are also something where I sometimes use custom soundtrack. Like the GTA games on the PC had like this cool option where like one radio station could be a custom one. So you could have like a file where you just put all the soundtracks you want to have, and then you just choose the custom one. And then during gameplay, if you get into a car, you choose the custom radio station and it would play your own songs. That was always pretty cool.
So
for games like that, it's kind of nice. Also, they're doing some improvements to the PlayStation Live thing when you stream, and your library is now apparently going to be searchable and stuff like that. So seems like it's getting a lot of useful and needed updates even. Yeah.
Yeah, I would just say this thing, and I could be completely wrong, it happens. This is something that still kind of annoys me about Sony. And I could be wrong. Is that they announced it? It doesn't have a date or a window, does it? It's just like it's coming.
Let me check.
No, that's at fall.
So that's not a date.
No, that's not a clear date. Of course not. No.
Yeah. So, yeah, because it's the same. Like, I didn't know, and I could be wrong, but I see it on my timeline all the time. Like, the PlayStation Store still doesn't have an update time. Like, it's just Tuesday.
Yeah, kind of. You know, in time around when it's happening. Same here in Europe. It's usually Wednesday around, like, 4 or 5 o'clock.
Okay. It's just weird that, I mean, like, Microsoft, you kind of have an idea of when it updates. Nintendo is very particular. It's Thursday at noon, local time as soon as possible. But Sony, it's still like, oh, it's Tuesday. Just keep on checking.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't fix it. Like, I didn't get it with the PlayStation 3. I just kind of assumed it was a thing. But now that it's still weird that it's not a set time, like, okay, 9 a.m. Eastern is when everything goes up.
I agree. It really is weird. They should really think about, like, saying, like, okay, this is now when we will update, and this is when everything goes live. But I don't know how their stuff works, so who knows?
Yeah, I don't either. It's just, like I said, it's just
I would
really
love
strange.
To ask someone to actually explain to me why this is the case.
Then I'm sure they'll give you an update sometime soon, maybe spring. yeah, I think that's it for us this week.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed our interview. We shall probably be trying to do, like, we've done these before, it's just been a really long time.
Yeah. I have a couple more contacts, so you might be hearing some other people from the industry as well soon.
Yes, so once again, I want to thank Nick Chester for joining us, and for Martin and myself, this has been Dual World in 158.
Hey! Whoa.